On this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
What does it take to create a fashion line?
Come find out from the local founders of Boehm and Kenneth Boggs Custom.
In this industry, the trends are a moving target, and to stay relevant is very difficult.
Everybody was like, I don't know if I could wear this. I'm like, oh, let me show you somebody that looks just like you wearing this exact same suit.
I've learned more about fashion than I think I've ever learned in my life.
Join us for Roots, Race, and Culture.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Daner Gerald. Spring is here, so it's time to rotate our closets and bury the heavy winter wear for a season. And if you're looking to freshen up your style, you're in luck. Two of America's most dynamic fashion designers are here today, and yes, these revered clothing labels call Utah home.
Now, we often celebrate our unique cuisines, music, art, literature as part of our BIPOC culture. But today, we'll focus on the intersection of passion meeting fashion.
So, let's get into it. We'd like to welcome Fernanda Boehm from
the one and only.
The one and only Boehm. Please introduce yourself, Fernanda.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here. So my name's Fernanda Boehm, and I'm actually originally born and raised in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And when I was only 8 years old, back in 1992, we moved directly to the state of Utah.
Wow. Wow, okay, so that must have been a big, tough transition. How did you go from there to creating this amazing clothing company?
Fast forward to 2007, that's when we opened our first brick and mortar location.
Wow.
So I knew I've always wanted to be in fashion, but fashion is a very difficult industry to get into, especially, you know, back then I didn't have the experience. We started in 2007.
I want to get into more what brought you from what 1992 into that. But next, let's introduce, once again, the one and only, Kenneth Boggs, a.k.a. KB.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about yourself. You're both looking, everyone's looking great. You know? We're all looking great, but tell us about yourself, Kenneth.
First of all, thank you for existing and highlighting us today. Really, really appreciate it. Grew up in Los Angeles, California. Single-parent household with my seven siblings. Moved to Utah on a track and field scholarship.
Okay.
And end up, you know, always designing clothes and stuff like that, just in the background as I'm studying, and decided to create a business out of it.
So wait, now what part of LA, and then what part of Utah?
Crenshaw, ended up getting recruited to Orem, Utah Valley University, to run track.
Awesome.
That's a jump. From Crenshaw to Orem.
Right. That's like...
But you seem to have fit in pretty well.
Trying to blend in. Still stick out like a sore thumb, but it's good though.
Yeah.
What year was this around the time you got to Utah?
Just kind 2010. Of 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was a while ago.
Yeah.
It was not quite as diverse as it is now.
No, it's a little better now. Yeah.
Nice. So awesome.
I'm still curious, Fernanda. So 1992, what made you decide to move from Rio de Janeiro to Utah?
So I followed my parents, obviously, but so my dad wanted to get a degree from BYU, and he just wanted a degree from America because it's kind of a big deal back then, especially. And so he thought, you know what, I'm going to get a degree, like a PhD, and then I'm just going to go back to Brazil.
Yeah.
But we never went back. We ended up staying. And then I think my parents also saw that there was an opportunity in America to live the American dream, right? But it didn't start as a dream.
It was probably a little tough when you first got
here. Come here, we don't know the language, none of us speak any English, and just adjusting to another culture, another way of life. And it's very different from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to Provo, Utah. We were in Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
And so, it was very difficult as far as trying to make a living, and my dad's going to school. And so actually what they did is they cleaned buildings, right? And I mean, these were massive multi-story office buildings, and we started going with them to work. And so after school, every single day until midnight, we'd go clean these buildings. Wow. And people are thinking, oh, it's a profitable business. Not quite. My parents were working for minimum wage. We were working for free, right?
Wow.
And we did that for many, many years. And I figured out, since I was a child, like, you want anything, you got to get it yourself. Like, I couldn't rely on my parents. Mm. Again, we were translating for them because kids always learn the language faster. And so we had to be the adults in the home overnight. So I'm 8 years old, but I had responsibilities as an adult, right? So if my parents got like a speeding ticket or something, I had to go to the judge and I had to go translate. Oh, so I had to do everything. Me and my sister actually. So like, we had to be the adults in the house.
That'll give you a sense of responsibility, work ethic, a lot of things at a very young age. So,
and an understanding of bills. I had a friend from Portugal and he did the same thing with his mom because she didn't speak any English. And it was funny because when you talk about the immigrant story, that, you know, I remember there was this quote from this like Italian mafia movie where they said, you know, we thought when we'd go to America that the streets were going to be paved with gold, but we found out that the streets weren't paved with gold, and we were going to be the ones paving those streets. Kenneth.
Yeah.
So let's talk Kenneth Boggs.
So tell us a little bit about that transition, that journey, and getting into fashion from track and field. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
I definitely have to give credit to my grandmother. She's an incredible woman. Well, I'm gonna say my grandparents to be exact, but my grandmother, she taught me how to sew when I was 12. Because my grandfather, he's old school. He was like, hey, if their education don't work out, they should know how to work with their hands, just in case, right?
Right.
So I didn't want to be outside doing the construction stuff. It was too hot for me. Uh-huh. And I was like, you know what? Nah, you know, I'm gonna be where the AC's at. You know?
Sit me at the sewing machine.
Yeah. So me and my grandma, you know, we hit it off and stuff, and it was super cool because, you know, she always played Motown music in the background, so I get a lot of my inspiration from, you know, the Temptations, you know, Stevie Wonder, Teddy Pendergrass.
Ooh,
that's where I get a lot of
don't
my...
say it.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's just been really, really great. Obviously, coming from LA to Utah, one of the biggest culture shocks for me, it was seeing how people are very family oriented, right? And I'm seeing entrepreneurship everywhere, and I'm seeing people owning homes. So I'm like, how are you guys doing this, right?
Yeah, right.
And so one of the things I said before, a wise man said, hey, I'm not gonna teach you how to fish. I'm gonna teach you that you can own a pond. So it took my mindset from, you know, poverty consciousness to wealth consciousness to go into like ownership, and just went from there and just nice. Loved it ever since.
So you were just sewing while you were in school.
Yes.
And what was the transition point between that and, wait, this is a potential business, like?
Yes, so this is funny, because when I went off to school, like, everyone in my family was like, oh, that's gonna be the lawyer.
Okay, you were gonna be the lawyer.
I was gonna be the lawyer. Like, there was no ifs, ands, or buts,
gotcha.
Right? And I'm like, okay, all right. Because I got my degree in criminal justice, took the LSAT, was gonna go to BYU Law School.
Nice.
And I'm like, man, you know what? I'm gonna try this thing out. Because everyone kept seeing me like, where are you getting these suits from? I'm like, oh, I made it. And I had a buddy I went to school with. He was like, listen, I don't know anything about fashion, but my dad, he does pretty well. I'm gonna talk to my dad to invest and we can run a business together.
Wow.
And I was like, nice. Okay, let's try, give us a try. And that's when I had my first company. So we started off having a company down at Orem Mall. Did pretty okay.
Okay.
That's when I saw her store right a corner from us at
nice.
That time.
Getting together, same similar time frame.
Down in Orem. So that was a place called Form Fit at the time, and it did well. So I noticed that I was like, okay, we're gonna go online and start doing the B2B route and just transition from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that makes me wonder how you, like, did you always feel like you had a fashion sense, or where did that transition happen for you?
So most of my life, this is funny, I actually played in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. I learned the violin and did that. I mean, how did I pick the hardest instrument to learn? Seriously. And of course, and now I'm in the most difficult industry, which is fashion, right? So I remember out of high school, now you're going into college, so I actually went to the University of Utah to do music, and my violin teacher actually fired me. He said, you need to do fashion. Like, you're great at music, but I think your skill is fashion. I've always wanted to do fashion, but we're in Utah. Seriously, like, this is not the
It's not the fashion capital of the world.
Exactly. Not the birthplace for fashion, and especially back then. But then I wanted to actually go to FIT, move to New York, but it just wasn't feasible. Like, with my family conditions, like, I just didn't have the connections, the money, the resources to make that happen. So I actually went to Salt Lake Community College for fashion, you guys.
Wow.
And let me tell you, best kept secret.
Shout out Slick.
Slick?
Okay, no, Slick. No, think about it. As an entrepreneur, you gotta hustle. Like, you gotta be scrappy. You make work with what you have.
Yeah.
And so that was the mentality that when I started with a Slick, I learned everything I needed, and the teachers were amazing. I was actually sewing since I was in junior high, 14 years old. I already, you know, had the sewing machine, collected all the Vogue magazines. Nice. I even made my own prom dress in high school.
Wow.
Like, so I saw some Balenciaga dress. I'm like, I'm gonna remake that. So I was already sewing and
cool. You were just making it happen.
Yeah,
that's because, you know, Slick is a place that a lot of people don't really, I learned a lot about filmmaking and about acting there as well.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I've never been fired by a teacher. That was quite crazy. That's crazy.
So I knew it was my path. Like, I knew somehow, because I was so creative to a level that I wanted to get into it. Same question as I'm sure people in the audience has. It's like, how do you get into the industry? And actually in 07, we saw an opportunity. It's like, you know what? There's no boutique shopping in Utah. I mean, you can go to Dillard's, Mervyn's,
JCPenney,
right. Target.
Like, there Mervyn's.
Department stores. No, it existed.
You aged yourself just now.
No, I know. So there really wasn't something fashionable. So we saw that opportunity in Utah.
I saw a need and you filled it. Right.
Yeah, but it wasn't. So, our first concept actually failed. The words BOHME was in all caps black. We rented this tiny little store in the mall. This is before people were really comfortable shopping online. So we started with the stores, and people didn't understand the concept. They didn't know how to say the name. It just looked foreign. So people would actually walk right in front of our store and say, "Oh, don't go in there. It looks expensive. Like, what is that? It's like a European shop."
Wow.
So.
Yeah, well, that's names, not Brazilian names. So, I mean, and I want to actually shift gears for just a second before we go into some of these other experiences that you guys have had. People may not realize how much of an influence Brazil and Africa, African Americans have had on fashion. And so we have some things that have really come from Brazil. For example, Brazilian bikinis, like, that's
huge.
We invented it.
We've got some video footage.
This is
way back in the 70s when people in America were wearing, you know, full, like, dresses to go to the beach, basically. And in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, you see that the clothing was very different. What are some other things that are Brazilian influences on American fashion that you think of?
I mean, obviously we're the most famous for the Brazilian bikini, but I would say a lot of the bright colors or the Havaianas brand, right?
Oh, yeah,
we were talking about the flip-flops.
Yeah.
Is this funny? But here it's like a big brand, but we grew up with it. Even the kids from the slums had Havaianas on. Like, that's what we got spanked with, was the Havaianas, right? And so now it's like a brand. I'm like, wait, what's going on? This is like something you'd find like at your local market, right? Wow. But there's a lot of influences. And even for Brazilians, like, something we don't think about. If you think about it, like, I think we had this conversation before, more slaves were sent to Brazil than America. America got just under 400,000. Brazil got 5 million.
Right.
Wow.
Okay.
Right.
So now do the math there. So everything about our culture is from Africa. Mm-hmm. The food we eat.
Mm. Yes.
It's all African.
Yes.
Or African,
based,
like,
right.
or that's like the slave food that they started, and the beans and rice.
Yeah.
That's what we eat today,
right? It's the origin.
the music,
capoeira.
Samba.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the music.
Right, capoeira. That's our martial arts.
Right, yes. Right.
And yeah, well, there's a cool story as to how capoeira came to be. They actually made it illegal to fight. And so they're like, we're not fighting, we're dancing. Because they kept getting into a lot of fights. Yeah, so anyways, and so...
When we're speaking of enslavement, and we have... my dad called me about this, and I had never heard this term before, Negro cloth, which for in America, this was a specific type of clothing that was made for those who were enslaved people. Here's some samples of it, and it was made because it was sturdy, it was rugged, it would last long. It wasn't really necessarily very fashionable, but it was something that would last for a long period of time. And you know, there's some debate about what that led to as far as American standards, but I think it's definitely visible in the workwear that you see a lot of blue-collar people wearing, right? And so this was a big influence on American clothing, and it all started with enslaved people. So I really think that's one of the fascinating things. So I want to now get some thoughts from you, Kenneth, about what does it take to like create something different and new? And I want to hear from both of you about this. And so let's take a look at your clothing, your threads, right? By the way, as we get ready to look at these videos that kind of highlight some of your brands and some of the apparel that you've designed, people in the audience are going to want to know, you're both looking fabulous. You're dressed to the nines. Is this available at BOHM, what you're wearing? Can we find
it? It was past season, so no.
Okay, so it's not there anymore. This is last, but it still looks good.
This is last month's stuff.
But you said earlier, this is a bodysuit.
Yeah.
Which is not really something you would see people in America wanting to buy, but yet.
Okay, all right, okay, let me talk about the bodysuit. This is
Please.
Funny. So I've been through so many cycles. I've been doing this for almost 20 years, right? I mean, BOHM was almost 18 years old as a company. Mm-hmm. When I started, when I would go out to the market, the vendors would show me like a couple of racks, and I would start going through a rack, and they would go, oh, I'm so sorry. This is the South American rack. Don't look at this. Here's the Caucasian rack. Right? Because we shop very different.
Wow.
Which I totally understand. It's like, oh, of course, it's very Colombian and the Mexicans love it and the South Americans love it. It's very sexy. Mm-hmm. That was the rack with bodysuits. Mm. I could not sell a bodysuit for free because it was just too sexy. It was too form-fitting. That's like not what you did. You wore something a little bit more oversized, pastel tones.
Mm.
So now, after the whole, you know, Kardashians kind of made it popular, now it's acceptable to wear a bodysuit. Isn't that insane? Like, I couldn't sell it for free, and now it's like, no big deal. We can sell a bodysuit.
The things that were part of Latin culture are now coming into vogue here in American culture. So,
what about you, Kenneth?
What are your thoughts on what does it take to stand out?
Great question. It goes back to one of the things I mentioned. It was cool to hear her music background, right, that she executed. Because I feel like some things run concurrent. I believe that food and music bring cultures together. Because I say that, especially with music, one thing what makes a great song is storytelling, right? And so for us, what we try to do different is to create your own story. Right, so.
With the apparel,
right? Okay. I'm like, hey, let's make sure you look like an outlier, right? So we always execute on that. Something they have in Utah Valley is called ABC, which means always be closing, right? Because they got a lot of salespeople down there, right?
Oh, got it, right, yeah.
So, and Gary Glenn Ross.
Yeah.
Closing.
Yeah, so in my world, I have ABCD, which is appearance, behavior, communication, digital footprint. So we try to execute on every single one of those, right? Because your new business card in today's time is your image, right?
Yeah.
Your appearance, right?
Yeah.
Be your behavior, where you're a good person, bad person, whatever the case may be. And I think we all know the C to communication, knowing the difference between your IQ and your EQ, right?
Because EQ.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me what's EQ?
Your emotional intelligence.
Got it. Ooh.
Right, and so like your people skills and whatnot. Because I know people with high, you know, IQ, but they have low EQ.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So when it comes to culture, they're dumb as rocks.
Right.
And so and obviously digital footprint, how you look online. So that's what we always try to execute on to make sure we create your own story.
I love it. So let's take a look. Can we pull up their looks, their fashion? Who do we got? Who do we got up first? Kenneth, let's see what.
There we go. Ooh, look at that.
That's looking good online. So tell us a little bit about the story of what's the story that you're telling with as we watch this video?
Yeah, so this is just a Renaissance man right here, you know, going on with his day, who's a reader.
This slick man, Joey, is actually in our studio audience.
Yes, which is super cool because
he's
a first family member that actually invested in me while he was fighting in the UFC.
Nice.
So it's really cool, really cool. This right here is our winter collection right here. Nice tweed, drapes on the body really, really well. Nice charcoal look or whatnot.
And high fashion, what is that, a vintage Ford there?
The Ford GT, that's the first American car that ended up beating a Ferrari.
Nice. So that's a statement there, that's a story.
Yeah. Wow, so we like to showcase, you know, the American muscle and American culture as well, so, yeah.
Yeah, let's take a look at Fernanda's stuff. Let's take a look at Boom.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that.
Okay, talk us through this. Oh, Fairbone, that's different. What's that?
So that's actually a premium line within the Boehm collection. So it was just an 8-piece limited time collection that that I did. Then I personally, you know, designed all the pieces, and it was funny because one of the zippers was so big that the chunky zipper, yeah, you see it there, that they had to pour the mold. So the manufacturer's like, I'm sorry, we don't have a zipper this big. I said, well, pour a mold and make the zipper from scratch. I don't know what to tell you. And so every hardware, everything was custom made. The lining was custom printed. Everything was, you know,
done. There's your beautiful face, Fairbohm. Yeah, your own signature collection within your brand.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's a whole different way of looking at it as well. So what was the sort of decision of making a brand within a brand or a line within a brand?
Okay, I'll tell you this. As an artist, I'm sure, you know, Kenneth feels this way, that it can be very vulnerable for you to put your art out for the world, right? Mm-hmm. Because people are gonna judge you, or maybe they're not gonna like it, or maybe this demographic's not gonna accept it. So it's very vulnerable for you to put out artwork, okay, any type of art, and have people accept it. But after so many years of doing this, I got into a space where, how do I say this? I didn't care what people think.
That's perfect.
I said, you know what?
That's what this
show's
all about.
If you love it, you love it. If you don't, you don't. I'm gonna put out pieces that if I was inside my closet, I would reach for these certain capsule pieces. Mm. And that's what this collection was. Nice. I did it for me. It was very selfish because everybody knows, like, if you're a fashion designer, you know what you're doing? You're reading sales reports and you're analyzing numbers. Oh, they like red, make more of red. Oh, they like this dress, make more of this dress, right? Yeah. Like, it's very numbers and data oriented. Mm-hmm. And so this collection was very much, I didn't look at selling reports, I didn't care. I said, you know what? What would Fernanda like to reach for inside her closet that are timeless pieces that in the next 10, 20 years, I'm still gonna be reaching for that black skirt or the black trench coat. I'm still gonna reach for these items.
Awesome.
And
that
so that was the idea behind
it.
And it was very vulnerable to, you know, go and spend company dollars on this time, effort, and have it not be accepted.
Right.
And it was.
That's
it did.
Risk.
It did great. It was very successful.
Yeah.
But it was. It came from a very vulnerable space as an artist.
Well, I think that's something that people can appreciate, though, when you put that vulnerability out there, and that's part of like cultural awareness, emotional intelligence, all those things. That EQ is understanding where people are coming from, getting a sense of appreciation for it. And then, you know, when this comes, you know, it's a matter of taste. Like sometimes you support things because you believe in what that person is about, you know?
And there's fearlessness to it, you know? And I think both of you probably have had, you know, your cultures influence the stuff that you did. Did where you grow up in Crenshaw influence the style and the way that the fashion came about?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Like, I've been to different countries and or whatnot, and then I realized how, like, impactful, like, people are looking at people here in the States. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, and like, you know, because I, you know, places like in Russia, South America, you know, I can't, you know, I only speak one, you know, one language, but I'll try to pick up on it, but I'm seeing what they're looking at, and I'm like, oh, wow, like, they're watching us and how we do things, because everyone comes to Los Angeles to live that dream, right? Mm-hmm. Fashion, modeling, you know, movies the whole nine yards, right? And I tell them, like, hey, good luck, right? Because it's not easy, you know? I always think of, like, hey, go to a place where you can blow up, right? You know, be a big fish in a small pond. I know cliche that may sound. Mm-hmm. But the influence down in Los Angeles, I realized, you know, I've been in so many fashion shows out there. You know, as a kid, I couldn't get in, but I was watching, you know, from afar or whatnot, because here I am, a kid from South Central. I didn't have the right apparel to fit in with them.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, let me switch this up a little bit.
Make my apparel.
Because I can't find nothing on the rack that I like anyway, so let me create my own stuff.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, you know, and you mentioned earlier this year, we had the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Most watched halftime show in Super Bowl history.
Are you talking about Kendrick Lamar's jeans?
Kendrick Lamar. Yeah. Well, the jeans were one thing. He's trying to bring back bell bottoms. And the way he does things is might as well be done. So, but like, that's, I don't know if he's from Crenshaw, but I know
he's from Compton.
Right. And so that's what people are watching, that influence, that culture. And, you know, we have to be unafraid to be vulnerable and to let people see what we're about. So I'm kind of curious, now, do you have a brick and mortar store? I know you're apparently digital footprint is big, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Yeah. It's funny because we have common mutual friends. I met her through Chad Peterson and his wife.
Angela.
Yeah, because they came down to my store down in Provo, and they were like, man, like, who are you? Like, I didn't know this was here and this and this. And one of the conversations we had prior, most people when they do come to my store, you know, they ask if I'm, you know, the employee, right?
Oh, let's talk about that. What is that like? Tell us about the experience.
For sure. Because when you think of Kenneth Boggs, you don't think of a guy that looked like me or you, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And so most of my employees, they're white, so they think that they're the owner and I'm the employee, right? So, you know, and I, you know, I got thick skin, so I'm always laughing. I'm like, oh yeah, cool. They're like, how long have you been working for Kenneth Boggs? I'm like, you know, just for a couple months.
My whole life.
You know, but like, it's good, man, because one of the people down there said, hey, you can't, like, we got to make sure you stay here in the state of Utah because we need you here. Because how are they going to learn down here? Like, it's very important, right? Like, with her brand, what she built, and I was like, I didn't think of it that way because I was going to just head back home.
Right,
I was
LA.
Like, hey, I'm at the red carpet events. Oh, I'm going back. I made a name for myself. I'm good.
Yeah.
I was like, no, but we need you here so that, you know, we can have more culture.
Yeah, that's the epicenter of how, you know, we started the show, you know, was because, you know, we talk about not seeing, you know, like, us living here for him living for 20 years, me living here my whole life, not seeing people of color doing stuff on a regular basis. I mean, how often when you go into a store do you see a person who owns a store who's black? How often do you go to, you know, see a black cop? Do you see a black banker? Do you know all of those things above? It's so important, you know, that we have that representation. I'm curious how Brazil influenced your fashion, though. I'm curious how you know, with the carnival and.
Let me tell you. You would think, I've been here for most of my life in Utah, and you would think, oh, I'm going to gravitate towards items that are, you know, mostly Caucasian or Scandinavian, which is a lot of the influence in the state of Utah. And I still gravitate towards the items. Like, genetically, I make decisions as if I were living in Brazil or Europe. Like, because I'm mostly Portuguese, a little bit of Spain. A little bit of African. I'm only like 6% African, and then Germany, that's the name German, B-O-H-M-E. And so I've noticed that my genetic composition wants to make the decisions kind of like the fair bone line that was very European, something you wouldn't find here. But I have to catch myself sometimes because I have to remember who I'm selling to. A majority of my demographic is in the U.S., so I have to tone myself down, and I have to second guess sometimes. It's like, no, is this Fernanda, you being Brazilian, or is this... Okay, no, you have to think about your demographic and who you're selling to. So yes, I do have to, I'm very aware of, oh no, this is what Fernanda would pick versus, okay, this is who I'm.
What
this,
Becky from Orm would pick? What,
yeah. You know. Becky from Orm.
Okay, wait a minute. So tell us, have you had any sort of similar experiences as the owner of the business,
sure.
A BIPOC?
Well, okay, here's the other thing. Maybe I'm speaking to the ladies, and maybe not minorities, but being a minority and a female owner, I remember I went to one of the construction sites. At that time, we had 20 plus locations, and I showed up to one of the sites. I was supposed to be there at 2 p.m., and we were moving stores, so we still had a store. Our new store was under construction, and I got there, and the guy said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" I said, "I'm here for the BOEM appointment. You can go grab an application because the store's not open." And I said, "Well, actually, I don't work there," and it was this whole debacle, and then I told him, "I'm Fernanda. I'm supposed to be meeting you here at 2. And by the way, the reflected ceiling plan is all wrong."
Ooh.
And he went, oh my gosh. I was expecting a man to come through the door.
Hey,
I'm
Fernanda?
So sorry. Maybe he saw Fernando. I don't know. But you know what? We laughed afterwards. We're still friends. It's cool. Like, I took it with a grain of salt. I said, "Don't worry about it. I understand." And especially, a few years ago, I looked even younger for my age. I've always looked young for my age. And so has being a female minority, has that worked for me? Has that worked against me? I think it's been an advantage point because I see things a little bit different. And yeah. I see, marketing and branding and style and fashion a little bit different than my peers. So I think I took that as an advantage point.
Yeah,
let's talk about the beauty of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I know we can't say that anymore, but that's the beauty of it.
Okay, well, what about touching about advertising?
Let's talk about advertising and inclusivity in advertising.
That word, I can't even hear it anymore.
Yeah, I know.
We'll talk about why.
What are your thoughts about advertising, image, marketing, diversity in the fashion world? Start over here.
Yeah, it just goes back to what I mentioned before. It's like, how do you bring the cultures together, right? Because we find out, like, we're all blessed to be on this planet for a reason. Like, no one is above each other, whatever case may be. And so when I look at, like, my NFL athletes, right, who are bigger guys, right? Because it's like, hey, I want to look like you, but I want to be like this size, though.
You gotta be that size.
Sure. I got you.
Paycheck.
Yeah. Because, because everybody was like, hey, like, I want to wear this, but I don't know if I could wear this. I'm like, oh, let me show you somebody that looks just like you wearing this exact same suit. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't think of it that way. So if I answered it correctly, I like to focus on, like, misfits and everybody who is more so, whereas, like, they don't feel brave enough, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with the concept of how I end up starting a business and how my mindset goes. Like, I wasn't the smartest, the fastest track runner, whatever case may be. I was just the bravest. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, when you come over here,
courage.
Have a brave heart. That's all you have to do, and, we can design something for you. So
that's
if that makes sense.
Yeah. I love that. Like, yeah. It takes courage to see yourself in something that you may not feel comfortable in until you just try it and see.
Exactly.
And now, I'm gonna just spill the beans. Now, from what I understand, your brand, BOEM, was the first company to use a black female in their...
Utah apparel-based company to use a black woman in an advertisement.
Wow, so what are your thoughts about advertising in the fashion world?
And back then, this was 10 plus years ago, if you're a Utah company base, you just use Caucasian girls or whatever you had at your access. And, we don't have a lot of diversity, so it's even hard to find Utah models. And then the really good ones you had to, fly in. But we happened to have one of our first employees, which was a black model guy. He was a guy over 6 feet tall, track runner, Ryan Atrice. Anyways, he had this beautiful girlfriend, and she was black from Atlanta, Georgia. And we used her for one of our advertisements. It was even in the front of our store in a big poster. And now looking back, I didn't know until now, looking back, it's like, actually, we were one of the first to use, minorities and, you know, black females in advertisements. But going in a little bit deeper, that I don't think the audience is, I don't know if they're catching on, but we talk about discrimination, being prejudiced. Everybody is at some point. And you're thinking, oh, every time I see a commercial, you see somebody that is of color. Mm-hmm. Or a magazine, you see somebody of color.
Yeah, it's trendy right now.
Right.
Or at least
but
it was.
Pay attention. Pay attention to another level. Well, Fernanda, they're not discriminating. Look, they're using somebody of color. Well, you're discriminating at some point because they're just not grabbing some random girl off the street. Mm. These are professional models. Mm-hmm. They have gone through a very rigorous process to be chosen at a certain agency that they're being hired of. They have a very professional look. Mm. Okay, so this wasn't like, oh, it's a black girl from the hood. No, this is a very beautiful professional woman.
Yeah.
That does this for a living. So you're discriminating at some point. She's not working in the back of the warehouse. Oh no, she is drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah.
So pay attention. Even the curvy women, we talk about inclusivity. Yeah. Look at the curvy women. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
They have beautiful faces.
Yes.
They have beautiful hair.
Yes.
Beautiful skin.
Yes.
So you're discriminating at one point.
Yeah.
You're discriminating within discriminating. Does that make sense?
Right, right, right.
So I don't think people pay attention to that. And the other thing is, you'll never see, rarely will you see a Latino woman.
Mm-hmm. This is true. I didn't notice that.
And that's, I mean, second to Caucasian, Scandinavian, is Latino. And they're not represented. Because we think, oh, let's just use somebody of color. Then we've covered everything.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they're just assuming,
the
ethnic, Latinos rarely cover.
Ambiguous, right?
Or, but, yeah, I get the ambiguous, because you know, I do acting, and you know, they'll do the same thing with me. If I shave, you don't know what race I am. You'll be like, they don't even know.
So they'll be like, Polynesian?
He could be anything. You just cover all the racial check marks, so just throw him in there, great. Yeah. And so the minute, you know, I grow out a little bit of facial hair, I look distinctly African-American, so I don't get cast as much. If I was to shave this, I'd be getting commercials in the different parts left and right.
Mm. Interesting.
You've talked about your stores and storefronts. We've got a video. We'd like to show what Boehm looks like on the outside and in, because it's a very beautiful store.
Thank you.
Would want to go hang out there, even if I wasn't shopping. So look at this.
So yeah, we.
So talk about the style and the.
I mean, everything about it is. It's very warm, welcoming, inviting, and
elegant.
I mean, it has that boho influence. It's very casual, but at the same time, it's polished in a way. You can't have a store too polished. I made the first mistake. Our first store was way too polished. People didn't want to come in. So it has to be casual and yet inviting at the same time. Mm. And so we do spend a lot of money in our stores. Like, you see it. Like, we don't skimp. Like,
yeah.
How many stores do you have?
17 locations.
17, all in the state of Utah?
Utah, Idaho, Arizona. I mean, we're in the surrounding
states. Mountain West area, okay.
Montana, yeah.
And you have plans to expand, if you want to mention that?
Oh, sure. Well, we've been recently acquired, and so the plans going forward is to expand it into, you know, a bigger footprint and national. So
nice, awesome. Congratulations on that. Yeah. So I want a quick 30-second. What do you think of our set? Because what you described as your stores is exactly our mindset when we were designing our set. We were looking at something that's inviting and comfortable, but still refined and elegant. What do you think?
You know what? I think the first thing that caught my eye was probably like the raw wood here, like almost like the acacia wood. And that reminded me of like when you said roots and you have a little bit of greenery. So I think you have the right elements going here.
Awesome.
I think it works.
We got a stamp of approval from a stylist. Love that. Thank you.
So. Yeah. And I think we touched before, like we were talking before on people that want to be in this industry and they want to go into like, what's the next step? And I think you touched a little bit about on it, but can I say something about Kenneth? Okay, we were talking about this before and he was talking about how he was sewing his own suits and every, you know, he says it like it's no big deal. Yeah. But the truth is, if anybody knows pattern making and making a suit, it's as hard as rocket science. Yeah. It's very specific. You're taking something flat and you're forming it to the body and you're making it 3D. Like, it's very specific. And so what he's doing, I'm like, wow, that is, it's very, very, very difficult.
Well, tell us about it.
And this is like one in a million that can do what he does.
Tell us about that process. She's giving you some shout out.
Yeah, and tell us some of the people you're fitting, because you're fitting some very high profile people.
Yeah.
Name drop. Go ahead. Give me permission. Drop the name.
It's funny, my cousin knows. That's one thing I hate doing, is name dropping. But recently did Floyd Mayweather, Deion Taylor. You'll see a couple suits, Shannon Sharpe, that we make.
Nice.
So our signature is this lapel pin. So whenever you see this, if you see it on ESPN or even shows, 9 times out of 10, we made it.
I love that. So I love that. A nice little signature touch.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, because everybody have different bone structures. And as she was alluding to, like, the whole phenotype of beauty, like, especially in the women industry, like, man, thumbs up to you, because I know that is a tough world. Yeah. Very, very tough.
Yeah. Like, yes, really it is. Because there's so many different body types.
Yes.
It's like, how do you please everybody? Yeah. Like, it's very difficult.
Yeah. I mean,
can we talk about that briefly real quick, though, about it being tough, you know,
because
you both have talked about the industry being tough. What's so tough about it that's so hard? We can start with you real quick, Kim.
Well, for men, our bone structure is pretty simple, right? Mm-hmm. Wide shoulders, hips, you know, waist a little bit smaller, or bigger legs, right? Yeah. And so the foundation, especially with the suits that we have to focus on, I used to go to, you know, the farm all the time, get horsehair with my grandmother and whatnot, because suits are made in 4 different ways, right? You have full canvas, half canvas, fuse, and unstructured, okay? Full canvas, what that is, that's wool and horsehair between a lining of fabric, so it drapes on your body really, really well, okay? Half canvas is half of that, okay? Fuse, that's just a suit that's just glued on, okay? So for me, I can, you know, function, I can take off the buttons and stuff like that, and I can grab a suit, I'm like, okay, you can't undo the buttons, the suit is just glued. Easiest way to make a suit, right? And obviously unstructured, that's when you don't have anything in there, you just drape on the body. So we focus on that so hard, because all our suits are handmade and full canvas. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes a difference when, like, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody wear a suit jacket and it pops up in their chest like this midair.
Yeah.
That means that there's nothing there and it's a fused suit. And then we get into the fabric and stuff like that, but that foundation is the key point of making a suit.
So, man, you are not lying. That sounds like rocket science. Yeah. I'm not lying. That is so when you look at clothing, you see something completely different. It's like me when I look at a movie. I see everything that's going on behind the camera and the lights and everything instead of just what's on the screen.
Yeah.
You see everything else inside the suit, how it was made.
Totally and different world for me. Yeah.
Fernando, you talked about the industry being tough. You said, you know, this is a tough industry for people to get into. What is your idea of being
tough? I think the hardest one is, the hardest part is doing it consistently year after year, because in this industry, the trends are a moving target. It's a moving target, especially in the women's industry. It's every 6 months. And so you think you got it, you have to innovate yourself the next month, and the next month, and the next month. And that, to do that consistently for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, and to stay relevant is very difficult. I mean, maybe somebody can come out and be successful for a year, but then what about the next year when nobody wants red anymore and now you're making blue? So it's very difficult that way to stay consistent and relevant for your customer, because a lot of companies that die in the fashion industry is, well, we've always sold, let's say, pink dresses. Now nobody wants a pink dress anymore. What are we going to do?
Wow.
So it's the moving target and constantly innovating. And it always wants your creativity constantly.
What
that
advice would you give?
That is a whole different perspective.
So my daughter's really into fashion. She's 24 years old. She wants to break into the business. I'm curious about what type of advice both of you would give to a young person wanting to get into fashion. Start with you, Kenna.
Find something that's timely and timeless. Like, because, in the suit world, right, you know, I have the early 1900, influence along with the current modern-day fit. mm-hmm. right? And we can reverse that to like, hey, what kind of color tones you guys want in today's time, right? Because we like to do like olive green, and because, you know, can't just do straight black suits now.
Right.
When people come to us like, oh, I want a black suit, I'm like, hey, I'll tell you go down the street to go get that, right? Come here, you know, come and get like a feel of something that's lifelong for you, right? Where you can have a suit that's one suit, but it's actually 10 suits in one suit.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
with this right here, I can switch this up. Keeping the jacket, I can switch it up, having like different pants, different shirts, different, the whole nine yards. I think you guys seen the Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
IG Reels, right?
Yeah.
And so, but for her, honestly, if she can execute on finding something that's timely and timeless, she'll be good.
Timely and timeless.
For me, I think, if somebody really finds what their superpower is, you gotta know what your superpower is. And maybe you're really good with people. And maybe you have a really good eye for something, or maybe you're creative. If you think about the fashion industry, every single industry ties back to the fashion industry. Construction, IT, right? Every single industry will tie, agriculture, like when you're talking about wool. Anyways, it all ties back to the fashion industry. So knowing what your superpower is, and just get your hands dirty. When I say that, get any position at a company. The smaller the company, the more you will learn.
Yes.
Because a lot of people are like, oh, I want to work for Nike. Guess what? That's all you're going to be doing, because there's 50 positions that you won't know everything else. It's like, well, do you not know what you're doing? No, I passed it off to my other colleague. I don't know. Right? So the smaller the company, the more hats you have to wear, and the more you learn. So this is funny. A lot of people have asked for internships at our company. And a lot of times I'll say, well, you know what? We don't have a buying or designing position, but we have a warehouse position. And what do they always say?
Oh no,
I don't work at a warehouse. Oh, I'm going to take out the trash. No.
Wow.
Right? And so they have this superiority that they deserve much more, whatever it is. It's like, oh no, I'll work at the warehouse if I need to. And if I were starting again, I would work at a warehouse. Do you know why? Because you're seeing the engine of how the company's working. You're looking at the invoices. You're looking at what's selling. You're looking what it's not selling. You're looking at all the problems, right? You want to be exposed to all of that, the engine, and not just, I do the marketing on social media. Well, do you know how the business works? No, that's not my problem. So digging in and taking anything and watching the company's mistakes and what they're doing and what they're not doing.
Wow.
That's what I would do. I would just dive in.
All aspects
of PhD.
And then
in
while
itself,
you're
right?
in there, that person could go, oh my gosh, for some reason, I'm really good at inventory. You're like, huh? That's not creative. There's people that are creative with numbers. Yeah. It's finding your superpower.
Sounds like the film industry, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or the TV industry, where you start in one position, then you go, you know what? Actually, I prefer the camera. I prefer this.
We actually hired this exchange student from Slovakia, and she started picking orders. It's like, nobody wants to go pick orders, right? But she was so good that she ended up being head of marketing.
Wow. For web sales.
And she ended up making the decisions of what got bought in the designing department.
That's
right?
Amazing.
Because you as a person, if you're meant to be where you are and you're meant to do what you're gonna do, the universe will open doors for you. And when I say that, like, I remember when I almost closed the first location, the first store, because it didn't work. And I actually prayed to God, is this what I'm supposed to do? Because that was difficult. We failed. Nobody understands us. And I got a clear answer that it's like, nope, go back to work and there will be angels that will help you. And so if people understand that they're not alone and that, you know, that there's a higher purpose, if they take their gift with a higher purpose and you align that, oh my gosh, okay, I understand what I have to give to the world. Like, how are you going to service and serve your community and your fellow being? And understanding your talents and gifts. And so I always think, like, the fashion industry, it comes off as fickle. But at the end of the day, it puts food on the table. From the person that's picking the cotton, the person that's sewing, the person that's shipping, right? All of that puts food on the table for somebody.
And you gotta, you know, you're right. Food and fashion are both things that people are very passionate about, and you need all of them. You gotta have some clothes on when you walk out the door, and you gotta have some food in your stomach to get where you gotta go. So, you know, I wanna sort of look forward a little bit to what you guys have coming up. So
We have some videos of the spring or the, some upcoming new looks. Or maybe they're old looks that are coming back in style. You know how that things goes. Things are very cyclical. So let's take a look. Kenneth.
Oh, yeah, that's the salmon right there. That's one of our favorites, especially in the springtime.
Oh, I love that.
I love that look. And obviously, you can tell with the other gentlemen what they're wearing. You know, we have a lot of pattern.
Private airport.
I love these non-traditional.
Yeah, so we don't, the goal is to make sure you don't look like you have something off the rack. So everything has texture to it, and so we always execute on making sure you look like the outlier, like I mentioned earlier.
That's my jam, man. Yeah. I gotta save some money and get me a Kenneth Boggs, bro.
Kenneth Boggs, beat the private airport and adjusted my cufflinks. All right, Fernanda, let's see the future of Fernanda's Boom. We'd love to see that. Take us through this. Fernanda, tell us about this.
Yeah, so this was actually like a very organic collection. And even the place where we chose to have the photo shoot and the videos was very particular. But we really wanted to show that like spring, natural, and very organic way. And especially with Boom, where we have very different styles. But this one was really well put together as far as the colors and the theme. It really ties into that organic fabric.
What is this house? What's that house that you're at?
So this is actually the famous Oasis house in Venice Beach, California.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like we were maybe in Spain or somewhere in some island, but yeah.
The comfort level of those clothing, that those garments looks very high. I gotta say that. Like, it looks like something you could wear that and be comfortable in it in a myriad of different places and spaces. And
Baum has, I mean, that's what we've done for many years, is really made that collection to where, you know, you can find a dress, but then again, you can have your everyday outfit, or maybe you're a mom, daughter, grandma. Like, we'll do a multi-generational of different styles. And so there's a method to the madness, so to speak.
I love it.
It has been a great time learning about fashion. I've learned more about fashion than I think I've ever learned in my life. Just in this half hour, 45 minutes, I have a much more of an appreciation of it. And it's been so great having both of you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, yes. And from all of us at PBS Utah, thank you for joining this amazing conversation. As always, other episodes can be found on our website, pbsutah.org/roots. Or on the PBS Utah YouTube channel.
And if you have any feedback or ideas for other episodes, be sure to give us a shout out on social media. Until next time, for Roots, Race, and Culture, y'all, we are out.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from viewers like you. Thank you.